Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The Alaska House has a new speaker and can officially begin its work. Alaska Public Media and KTOO report that Representative Bryce Edgman of Dillingham is back in the job he held for the two previous years. Selection of a speaker ends a 31-day stalemate that blocked work in the House. Two Anchorage Republicans, Chuck Kopp and Jennifer Johnston, decided to break the month-long tie and vote for Edgman, who was a Democrat but changed his party affiliation earlier this week to undeclared. Johnston described the path to the vote as a long, hard journey.
And I want to quote the late Ted Stevens, and I'm going to say, to hell with politics. I'm just going to do what's right for Alaska. And what's right for Alaska is that we get this House in order.
Johnston says she supports having a budget that won't take unplanned draws from any of the state savings accounts. Edgman characterizes the past month as trying, but says a lot was accomplished by House members talking across partisan lines.
Really focus on what truly is the responsibility in front of us, which is a fiscally sustainable budget. And a budget that Alaskans not only would be proud of, but a budget that also accommodates all of the needs and essential services that are important to our constituencies individually, but to the state as a whole.
All but five Republican representatives voted against Edgman. Wasilla's David Eastman, who was among the no votes, says most Alaskans wanted a Republican speaker.
I can't help but conclude that those back home would feel as though we were not listening to what they have asked for, were we to continue to maintain the leadership of the last 2 years.
All 15 Democrats, as well as four Republicans and Ketchikan Independent Dan Ortez, voted for Edgman. Kenai Republican Gary Knopp, whose decision to leave the Republican caucus in December led to the deadlock, was absent for the vote. It's not clear which members will agree to serve in the majority, which Edgman said is open to all members of the House. House committees could be organized as soon as today. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency will establish a contamination level for perfluorinated chemicals in drinking water. That's one of the primary objectives in an action plan unveiled yesterday. EPA Region 10 Administrator Chris Laddick shared information about the plan during a teleconference. Laddick says a maximum contaminant level for two common classes of perfluorinated chemicals, known as PFAS and PFOA, are being developed under a process outlined in the Safe Drinking Water Act.
By the end of the year, EPA will propose a regulatory determination, which is the next step legally required by the Safe Drinking Water Act for establishing an MCL.
EPA is currently operating under a health advisory for PFAS in drinking water of 70 parts per trillion, but some states have adopted more stringent standards based on new scientific research into the chemical's toxicity. PFAS chemicals have been used for decades in a range of products as stain-resistant, non-stick, and waterproof coatings, as well as an ingredient in firefighting foams. Those foams are the source of groundwater contamination in numerous sites across the lower 48 and in Alaska, including several in the Fairbanks North Pole area. PFAS chemicals have been linked to a range of human health effects, including cancer. Other aspects of the PFAS plan include enforcement actions, cleanup strategies, drinking water monitoring, research, and the process of listing PFAS chemicals as hazardous substances under the Superfund law.
This important work will provide additional tools to help states and communities address existing contamination and recover costs from responsible parties where appropriate.
Laddick says the plan does not address holding manufacturers of PFAS chemicals accountable, but notes that the agency has worked with eight large producers to stop manufacture of long-chain PFAS chemicals implicated in groundwater contamination, and the agency continues to review numerous other versions of the chemicals.
As new ones come forward, they have to come to EPA regarding those. And a lot of the replacements have been short-chain PFAS, so we're very tuned in to the fact that and want to know about any new chemicals coming onto the market.
Laddick adds that there are already 3,000 PFAS chemicals in existence. Tomorrow is Elizabeth Peratrovich Day in Alaska, and a new book about the Tlingit leader is out. As KUAC's Robin reports, it tells the story of the civil rights activist who changed Alaska.
Author Annie Bucheever grew up in the Juneau neighborhood where Elizabeth and Roy Paratrovich Sr. had worked to make life better for Alaska Natives. As a teacher, Bucheever knew of the Paratroviches' civil rights work, but didn't have a lot of information to pass on to her students, so she decided to write the book. It's called Fighter in Velvet Gloves, Alaska Civil Rights Hero, Elizabeth Paratrovich.
I thought a lot about a title. It was hard to come up with a title, and then I ran across a quote by Stella Martin, who's a very well-known Tlingit leader. She was a friend of Elizabeth. She referred to her as the fighter in velvet gloves.
Bucheever says Elizabeth Paratrovich was known for her high style and fashionable dressing. Her son, Roy Paratrovich Jr., worked closely with Bucheever on the book, which is aimed at teens and young adults. It tells the story of the racism that was legal and institutionalized before the passage of the Alaska Territories Anti-Discrimination Act of 1945. Bucheever says it's something that all Alaskans should know.
Looking at old newspaper articles from 1920, 1930, the way that they spoke about Alaska Natives was horrific.
David James, a Fairbanks book reviewer, wrote that the book should be in every school in the state to help students understand that racist time and make changes going forward.
I think they would understand that there's a history there, but there's also some pretty bad things that are still happening in the broader society.
Roy and Elizabeth were drawn to civil rights activism in the 1940s. Elizabeth was the Alaska Native Sisterhood Grand President. In that position, she addressed the Alaska Territorial Legislature in 1945. They had voted down an anti-discrimination law 2 years before, but activists kept trying. Those velvet gloves? As awkward as it may sound with 2019 sensibilities, Elizabeth's fashion style may be the trademark she is known for.
They didn't expect an Alaska Native woman to speak to them like that, dress so elegantly. She was a complete surprise to most of the legislators. I mean, they were blown away by her.
Elizabeth Paratrovich was the last to testify before the Territorial Senate voted on the bill in 1945, and her speech was said to have moved the all-white, all-male Senate to pass the bill. The law was signed on February 16, 1945. The book's official publication date is, of course, February 16th, but it's available now. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
And I'm Dan Bross.